Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jeff Dunphy. It is Friday, December 19th, and this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. This morning, we're going to talk a little about what has taken many global economic pundits to pay attention to what is happening in this calamity that we call our world. I want to chat a little about deflation today. I want to chat a little about oil. I want to chat a little about gold. And I want to chat a little about the currency war that is currently being waged against the ruble. So now I trust that most people have probably heard by now that world crude oil prices are in a dramatic plunge. In the futures market, the price is down almost 50%. So we had June when the price of oil was at $107.68, and it currently is at about $55, $56. So what happens when a price collapse like this happens, right? And from what we gather, prices in the cash market are even lower as various countries, which are desperate, are doing what they can to get prices for what they can. And it isn't just that crude oil prices are falling. We're thinking many of the economic plays that are happening and the aspect of how we call this MOPE, managing of prospective economics. And it's done in order to keep people from panicking. If they only knew how bad things were, people would panic and they'd start to have runs on the bank. They'd start to have runs at grocery stores. It wouldn't be pretty, I dare say. So this current wave of deflation has taken on a whole new intensity. Now, one of the websites that I frequent often is called Zero Hedge, but get a load of this in this last week or so, okay? West Texas, so WTI as opposed to Brent, but West Texas and Brent are both oil. It's the second worst week in over 3 years, so they've down 10 of the last 11 weeks. The Dow Jones has had a worst week in 3 years. The financial stocks, worst week in 2 months. The materials stock, worst week since September of 2011. The fear index, volatility index, is the biggest week since September of 2011. Gold has had the best week in 6 months. Gold is real money, as we've said, solidified sunlight, as you might recall. Silver's last 2 weeks are the best in 6 months. Silver's also real money, as you will recall. High-yield debt, or junk debt, it's the worst 2 weeks since May of 2012. Investment-grade bonds credit is at the worst week. The 10-year U.S. Treasuries, the best week. There you go. U.S. oil rig count, the worst week in 2 years. Rigs are clearly for drilling and fracking. The U.S. dollar's worst week since July of 2013. You know, it just keeps going. So why? What is happening with the intensifying deflation? Because as we've been explained, has been explained here on several occasions, the world is groaning under a ridiculously increasing debt load. So the central banks have printed up the better part of $11 trillion in new money in the last 5 years to fend off deflation. Why? Because when debt loads get too large, some people and companies can't pay back their loans, so they default, and the money they owe disappears. If they are companies, their employees lose their jobs, so their households spend less, and putting pressure on more businesses because of lost sales, leading to more layoffs and more defaults, and it becomes this vicious cycle. An economy in reverse, really, and an economy that is deflating. Remember, because all of the money in the system is debt, the economy must always grow to pay the interest on that debt. And if the economy stops growing, the interest can't be paid, defaults arise, and the inflation cycle ensues. People tend to associate deflation with falling prices, but the falling prices are the result of deflation, not its cause. Now, let's keep in mind that the system of the central banks has always had its agenda into inflation. Inflation is the only way that it can work. It's kind of like a shark. It can't stop swimming. It can't stop inflating. And inflation is an invisible tax. When the Federal Reserve Act was put into place in 1913, so the better part of 100 years ago, or more than 100 years ago, you could buy a basket of goods for $1 that today costs you $100. So we've had a devaluation of our U.S. dollar, the currency, by 99%. So the central banks are trying to ease the debt load by lowering interest rates to zero or even lower. And in fact, in Switzerland right now, the Swiss banks charge you to have money in the bank, which is absolutely ludicrous. Now, one of the results of the printing of all this cheap money is that it financed all kinds of projects that never would have been created without this free money, because there weren't very many good ideas to begin with. And there are stories. We've all heard about China having 3,000 companies all basically in the same business. And how can they all make money? Well, they can't. Such overcapacity in China, building cities that are completely empty of people. Such overcapacity makes life tough for all of the companies, which all have to lower their prices, which start laying off employees, which can't pay back their debts as it spirals down. Okay, so this lowering of rates might seem to work for a short time, but when it's carried on for years, it's deflationary. The second thing the central banks did was create this new $11 trillion to buy more debt. So they're trying to fight a problem of too much debt by creating more debt. They're borrowing to get out of debt. How ridiculous is that, right? And historians will marvel at this lack of logic by an entire academic profession. It is the emperor's new clothes. The reason for this pervasive illogic is that academic economists have for years purged from their ranks anyone who brought up the topic of real money and gold-backed stuff, and so consequently they were just ridiculed and marginalized. So effectively what they did is they dared to get rid of the kids who say the emperor has no clothes. Okay, so let's get back to the big deal of the last several weeks, the crash in oil price. So from a strictly personal perspective, you might think this is terrific because it'll be less expensive to fill up your car. And that is true. But let's chat a little about why oil prices are indeed crashing. Now, the economist in us would say supply and demand, there's too much supply, or demand is falling. However, let's fall into our premise of investigating what we're being told versus, in fact, what is true about things. I think that many of the countries, and certainly the big banks, and certainly the powers that be, if you will, have a vested interest in making everybody believe that things are doing really well. But in fact, there is an enormous demand fall off in oil because the global demand for oil is dropping precipitously. Okay. And any hope that global demand would provide a floor for oil's free fall was dashed as the leading energy forecaster cut its outlook for the fourth time in 5 months. And then crude began to tumble. So I've never heard of one of these international organizers like the International Energy Agency cutting their forecast four times in 5 months. Okay, so let's chat a little about what is happening to cause this collapsing demand for oil. Several recent financial statistics that measure changes in the economy are reporting levels of decline. Now, I'm not one to believe most of these things because I understand that many of them have an agenda. They want to tell you what they want you to think, as opposed to giving you information where we can draw our own conclusions. So these stats are sort of suggesting they haven't seen these levels of decline last seen since 2009, which is when the mortgage debacle started to have its repercussions. Recall that a lot of people thought the world economy was not just staring into the abyss, but about to fall in. So we have purchasing price index sliding, finished goods prices are tumbling, Short-term inflation expectations have crashed. Now, how does this relate to yet another miracle discovered by the nonsensical big-breasted economic and political cheerleaders, the U.S. shale miracle? This is the miracle by which the U.S. will allegedly track its way to energy independence. Now, that, again, is an absolute nonsensical fallacy, but again, it's raw nonsense. The American economy and the American mainstream media are caught up in delusory projections of things, okay? So, for the last 3 years, the U.S. shale drillers have been borrowing a dollar and a half for every dollar in oil and gas that they pull out of the ground. And that was with oil prices above $100 a barrel. So the industry as a whole expected to get to break even instead of losing money hand over fist, which is what they have been doing with oil just above $100. Now, think about that. You know, somebody way smarter than I said many, many years ago, there's lots and lots and lots of oil in the earth. And there is. It just depends at what price. And when the U.S. shale drillers are spending a buck and a half to get a dollar's worth of value out of the ground, that is a recipe that leads quickly to disaster. Okay? So the price is now under 60, which is less than half of the price needed for them to even break even. So perhaps when you're spending, when the price of oil needs to be $120 for you to even go and pull it out of the ground, you know that when the price of oil is at 60, lots of people are taking great exception to this calamity. Now, all told, since early 2010, these energy producers have borrowed about $550 billion. And remember that the size of the subprime mortgage calamity was around $1.1 trillion. And the collapse of that subprime mortgage market nearly took down the entire system. So these oil frackers have borrowed over $500 billion just since 2010. And it now looks like a lot of that borrowed money will not get repaid. That is, they won't have the funds because the price of oil is at 60 bucks. Now, that $550 billion, or half a trillion, was a lot of spending for purchasing equipment and creating jobs to use that gear. It turns out that a third of the business capital spending in the U.S. in recent years has been for energy exploration and production. And some estimate that 90% of new jobs created in the States in the last 5 years were related to this shale economic recovery brilliant thing. But now suddenly nobody wants to lend the frackers cheap money to create more overcapacity in the shale patch, because the lenders know that there's a good chance they'll never get paid back. So now we're going to see a huge drop in equipment purchases, job layoffs, leading to what? Good old deflation. Okay. And if you don't think this can happen, I suspect you need to give your head a shake. Okay. So plunging oil prices have sparked a drop of almost 40% in new well permits issued across the states in November, in a sudden pause in the growth of the U.S. oil and gas boom, the shale boom. So data provided to Reuters on Tuesday by industry data firm Drilling Info Inc. showed 4,520 new well permits were approved last month, down from 7,227 in October. Okay, so 4,500 from 7,200, there you go. It's starting to collapse. So the U.S. shale miracle will prove to be yet another fable, along with U.S. energy independence it was supposed to engender. So, and it was fueled by a supply of ultra-cheap money that is now dried up. And one aspect of these wells, when you drill oil wells, all wells have a decline rate. So a well that's producing 1,000 barrels a day next year produces 800, and the year after produces 640, and it just falls by 10 or 20% a year, conventional oil. However, one aspect of these horizontal wells that have many fracks in them is that they lose 70% of their productive capacity in the first year or two, and they're down by 90% inside 3 years. So to keep this oil flowing, these fracking companies have to borrow more and more money and spend more and more capital. So it's a exploitation device, okay? It wasn't a very good business model and would not have existed had all this cheap money, coupon money, yield money, been provided to them by the Wall Street banks, banksters, if you will. So, while you may be able to buy cheaper gas for your car, the U.S. economy is likely to take a serious hit relating to jobs and business spending from this oil collapse. And the U.S. is supposed to be the bright spot in the world economy. So Japan is proverbially in the crapper, for want of a better word. And the Eurozone is perennially flirting with recession and is also being dragged down by the U.S.-led sanctions against Russia, which itself has fallen back into recession. I'm going to do a little bit of an expose on the currency wars that is now going on with the Russian ruble via the U.S. or the big banks, in fact. Okay, so China still claims to be growing, but the hard evidence of the falling prices mentioned above, I would suspect that China is having a bit of a go as well. So the global financial system, according to the Deutsche Bank, is still extremely fragile, not sustainable. 2015 will be the ninth year of highly unconventional central bank policy, and we're no nearer to finding a sustainable solution. Now, historically, deflation is very unkind to stock prices. World stock markets are currently being floated by free money. That's one of the reasons they are artificially supported. And as this deflationary trend continues because of this overload of debt, we're going to see the end of several cycles, including the 26,000-year precession of the equinox, which tends to really clear the decks on this planet. Another little esoteric approach. Now, will this deflation crash the price of gold? I am not of that opinion. Historically, gold increases in purchasing power during both inflationary and deflationary periods. And these are periods during which people start to think that governments are losing control, so people opt for real money over the fiat nonsense or government-issued script. Gold loses purchasing power when people think everything is, to put it technically, spiffy doodle, hunky dory, cool, and that the government is doing a great job. I suspect, as you might well take from my sarcasm, I don't think people are observing that things are hunky dory. People don't see things like that when during huge bouts of deflation. And intelligent observers and people way smarter than you and I are buying up gold and silver as fast as they possibly can. So, for an example, the U.S. Mint has declared that the sales of the silver American Eagles rises to a record high for the second consecutive year. Smart people, little influence. However, nonetheless, I suspect it is probably time to be buying gold and silver. So, sometimes in reaction to deflation, governments really ramp up the money printing presses, and people lose all confidence in government money. This is also known as hyperinflation. So whatever that is, and whatever it is coming, it's not a function of if, it's merely a function of when. And here's an interesting point to note. The Department of the Treasury is spending $200,000 on survival kits for all of its employees who oversee the federal banking system, according to a new solicitation. As Free Beacon reports, survival kits will be delivered to every major bank in the U.S. and include a solar blanket, food bar, water purification tablets, and dust masks, among other things. The question, obviously, is just what do they know that the rest of us don't? Food for thought. Now, I want to revisit certainly a friend of this show and a friend of opening your eyes and retooling, but I want to talk a little about currency wars. Now, you may remember James Rickards, who's written the book Currency Wars. He wrote one, and he also wrote another book called The Death of Currency. And he's been on all the talk shows, and he has a real penchant for calling the governments on their proverbial shit, if you will. So now I want to chat a little about U.S., but also global banking terrorism, okay? And it's sort of hit a new extreme this week. So this crime syndicate of these bankers are effectively doing everything they can and creating a war against the economy of Russia. And by doing this, they have destroyed the ruble. And this is currency manipulation. And this was what James Rickards was brought in to do in terms of his war games. Now, there's war games where you use guns and bullets and bombs and tanks and aircraft. There's also war games that they hired him to play and simulate, and that was financial war. How can you destroy an economy financially without bombing it? So the modus operandi, again, once again, currency manipulation. And what is the quickest and easiest way to destroy an economy? You drive the value of its currency to as close to zero as possible. So the effect of such a manipulated devaluation is a massive explosion in inflation. And the effect of that is to make all of who they're focusing it on right now, Russia, much poorer. So the economic destruction caused by this economic terrorism affects Russians and the Russian economy on a percentage for percentage basis. Each percentage lower that the banksters drive the ruble with this, with their criminal activity, the Russians' economy gets 1% poorer. Now, there are numerous aspects to this which clearly merit categorizing this assault as a new extreme. To begin with, there is both the magnitude and the sheer brazenness of this attack on the ruble. The latest plunge in the ruble's value came when Russia's benchmark interest rate is at 10.5%. So here, a comparison will be highly illustrative of the degree of the criminality at work here. The U.S. basically has a bankrupt economy. Excuse me. It is mired in a permanent worsening greater depression. There aren't any economists who would say that the U.S. economy is strong at all. It's only relatively strong because of the force of the manipulation that's going on. Its own currency, the U.S. dollar, is fundamentally worthless based on three different objective metrics. Yet, despite the U.S. interest rate being permanently frozen at zero, because the U.S. can't afford to pay the interest on their debt anyway, the U.S. dollar is once again at the top of the totem pole among the world's currencies. Now, that isn't because it's strong. It's because it's only relatively strong. Now, interest rates in countries, we call this interest rate parity theorem, which I wrote a thesis on, my God, 30 years ago, 35 years ago. So those of you who don't understand the relationship between interest rates and the value of a nation's currency, it's a simple equation. We live in a global economy filled with an ocean of liquidity and almost all of the paper wealth of the world's oligarchs. Very little of this money is ever productively invested. Thus, these oligarchs are permanently on the hunt for the best place to park this paper wealth. The higher the interest rate of any particular nation, the more interest the oligarchs can collect by converting their wealth into that nation's currency. As the equivalent of trillions of dollars of this currency is bought up on global markets, this forces the value of that currency higher in legitimate markets. So today, Russia's national interest rate is at about 17%, and the value of the ruble is still falling. The interest rate of the U.S. is still frozen at zero, but the dollar is still rising. It is not simply nonsensical, it is blatant fraud on a level never before seen in the history of the global economy. As James Rickards is wont to say, it's almost embarrassing. These guys should be embarrassed that the blatancy of their manipulation is so in everybody's face, right? So, based on all of our economic fundamentals of the two economies, it's the U.S. economy which should be experiencing a currency crisis. And with its national interest rates at an ultra-extreme high, it's the Russian ruble which should be soaring in value. So the actual value of these currencies is not merely wrong, it is totally, absolutely perverse and totally, absolutely illegal. So this brings us to the second aspect to this outrageous act of currency fraud, currency war, or economic terrorism. the fraudulent manipulation of the world's currencies by the Western bankers. Now, it's becoming more and more exposed. The pretend regulators of nearly every Western economy are now publicly investigating these banksters for precisely this form of criminal conduct. Now, the scary part is, are they and will they do anything about it? So several of these banks, thugs, if you will, have already been criminally charged with serial acts of currency manipulations. The banksters' eternal apologists, the corporate media, mainstream media, publicly predicted that one or more of the big banks, tentacles and henchmen, if you will, of the one bank, would be criminally charged, and even several of the banks themselves warned that they would be likely criminal charges. What happened? Nothing. Yet again. So yet again, this criminal syndicate, these economic terrorists, were let off with what can only be described as a slap on the wrist by a Nerf bat. They were fined paltry amounts, paltry fines, and sent off to stand in the corner with a dunce cap on. So, the banksters of the one bank are now known economic terrorists with a known method for conducting their economic terrorism, which is currency manipulation. But as their crimes against humanity reach new extremes, we see or hear nothing from the leaders of the rest of the world. Where are the public denouncements of this economic terrorism now being directed against Russia? Given the interest rate differential between the U.S. and Russia, which has already been engaged in an undeclared war against Russia for over a year, there's no possible way that their currencies could be at the opposite ends of the field. That's just nuts. It's impossible for the plunge in the value of the ruble to be anything other than U.S. economic terrorism. It's impossible that the leaders of the rest of the world could fail to be aware of this. Yet again, the haunting words of the pastor Martin Niemöller come to light. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. So clearly, the one bank is now gone for Russia. And ever since it ordered its various henchmen, the U.S. government, to engineer the coup in the Ukraine, Russia's closest neighbor, and to commence its economic and media propaganda war against Russia, it's been clear that this crime syndicate now sought to destroy, at least in economic terms, one of the world's great powers. Now, that war has reached a pivotal point in symbolic terms, if nothing else. If all of the other nations in the world do nothing but sit back and watch as the bankers destroy the Russian economy in an act that everybody knows is blatantly illegal and is totally malevolent, then good old Pastor Niemöller's warnings would have once again become a reality. So, it would demonstrate that the rest of the world is now being run like a flock of sheep, impotent, pathetic, standing next to the handful of these psychopathic bankers who are doing everything they can to facilitate a destruction of an economy to further their economic goal. A little more than a week ago, that the U.S. Congress passed a resolution clearing a direct path for a declaration of war against Russia. All that is required is for the one bank's favorite pet, good old Barack Obama, to pull the trigger. So if the banksters that be are not successful in their present campaign to bring Russia to its knees via its economic destruction, presumably the U.S. will fabricate a pretext to declare war and to seek to do so by military means. Now, God help us, you guys. What are the bankers? Where are their agendas? Let us pay attention to the fact that they may have agendas, okay? The traders are betting Russia's next move will be to sell gold. Is that the case? I don't know. Is that the one bank's real agenda? The new economic terrorism is now directed at Russia, attempting to force it to disgorge some or most or all of its gold. I do know that we may very well see a currency shift in terms of the U.S. currency becoming less vital to the world and there becoming a one world currency. There's several reasons to give this alternative agenda some serious consideration, apart from the propaganda. You know, my thinking maybe is that these banksters recognize the Russians have been buying gold at a wicked rate. And we already know upon previous actions that the world's banksters are quite concerned about the near depletion of the inventories or stockpiles of gold. I want you to remember a year ago when the banksters directed a campaign of economic terrorism against India. Remember? And why did it engage in such an act? Because at that time, India was importing gold at an unprecedented rate. How did it engage in that campaign of economic terrorism? By attacking, illegally manipulating the value of the rupee and causing a currency crisis. The only thing that which makes the current illegal assault on the ruble anything other than simple deja vu is the ferocity of this economic terrorism. The illegal assault on India's rupee was milder in its intensity, and the economic terrorism abated the moment that India's government capitulated to the bankers by instituting a near-total embargo on gold imports. If you don't remember that, go look it up. Conversely, even if these banksters were successful in forcing Russia, as an act of final desperation, to sell some or most of its gold, we have absolutely no reason to believe that the banksters would relent in its economic terrorism this time. The overall campaign by the puppet governments who are organized by the banks to destroy Russia is clearly nothing less than an existential threat to that nation. Yet, throughout the rest of the world, there seems to be an attitude of little more than business as usual. It's a shame. So the malevolence of the banksters gives me great pause, and the last time it generated such a crescendo of hate and aggression, it produced a world war. Let us hope that that isn't in fact where we're going. So ladies and gentlemen, this is Jeff Dunphy. It is Friday, December 19th, 2014. Thank you very much for your attention, and thank you very much for allowing us to be of service. I look forward to speaking with you next week. Goodbye.